Hello, this is Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the ISSB, and I'm here today with our Chair, Emmanuel Faber. We're recording this podcast following our February Board Week. Before we delve into the discussion we had this week, let's look at some of the recent developments. So firstly, we added to our toolkit to support jurisdictions as they navigate adoption considerations with a readiness assessment guide and tool. I wonder, Emmanuel, if you'd like to share a few thoughts on our regulatory implementation program and this new addition to the adoption toolkit.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. Sure, I will. And welcome everyone to the Dog and Pony Show of the ISSB. Thank you for your loyalty to our program. As Sue just said and alluded to, it's a key priority for us to support the implementation of ISSB standards around the world, resulting in comparable decision useful disclosures for investors. And a key aspect of this work is providing tools for jurisdictions. So we launched already 3 years ago the preparation of a program that started in May 2024 of regulatory implementation support to help jurisdictions on their journey from, for instance, getting familiar with the ISSB standards to assessing the case for their use, and then from there, developing a roadmap and finally executing that roadmap. Our adoption toolkit provides guides and tools to help jurisdictions think this through. And there are resources that jurisdictions can use to advance their considerations. So they are not prescriptive in any way. They are really designed to help, not to prescribe. The materials cover approaches that jurisdictions might take and features to consider in their regulatory framework, support for jurisdictions to determine the rationale for introducing ISSB standards, help for jurisdiction assessing the readiness of their market for delivering high-quality disclosures and using the standards, and also support for the development of a roadmap to introduce them into their local regulations. So the materials are informed by now 40 jurisdictions that are already taking steps to use the ISSB standards, and I'm indeed pleased to remind everyone here that this week we published the readiness assessment guide and tool. So it's aimed at supporting regulators to assess the maturity of their market to determine suitable adoption pathways, to support jurisdictions in following a structured, evidence-based review of readiness, and think about readiness in basically three important domains. The first is whether the reporting ecosystem, which is the institutional and market infrastructure, is ready to support high-quality disclosures. The second is about the preparer's readiness. So the readiness for companies, including from a governance, from a resourcing, from a competency standpoint, prior use of voluntary frameworks. And third, the support system, so the ability of development partners, accounting bodies, and others to help address capability gaps and support implementation. These insights can be really important for jurisdictions as they decide on the pace, the scope, the sequencing of regulatory action towards the adoption or use of ISSB standards. So we're delighted by the response from those jurisdictions to these tools and to see them used as they are making their decisions. And actually, I think that there are two jurisdictions that I'd just like to mention. And the first, is in connection with the work that we have started on an initiative called ISSB Passporting. This is to ensure that for foreign private issuers and subsidiaries of foreign entities, there is a possibility to use the ISSB standards as a passport into that particular jurisdiction. So in a multilateral world of 40 jurisdictions, it would reduce significantly the cost for preparers that would have to report in those jurisdictions for their subsidiaries in a way that would be simpler, that maybe the slight different languages that are being used in each of those jurisdictions, yet being functionally aligned in terms of outcomes of the information by the local standards. And so the one thing that I wanted to mention is that we had our first jurisdiction adopters working group meeting, nearly 40 jurisdictions, during our board week this week. And it was very timely as Japan have just been publishing a new provisions that enable foreign companies to report using the ISSB standards as published by us. And this is very much consistent with that ISSB passporting notion that is gaining momentum and on which we will continue to work with many jurisdictions. But two, there may be another important second jurisdiction that might be worth mentioning for this week.
Yeah, so the UK is another jurisdiction where we've seen progress this week. So congratulations to the UK Department of Business and Trade, who this week published the UK SRS S1 and UK SRS S2, which are based on IFRS S1 and IFRS S2. So these are the standards that will provide the basis for companies in the UK to disclose sustainability-related financial information to investors. So its publication is a really important step forward. And this is really closely related to a consultation that was launched recently by the UK Financial Conduct Authority, the FCA. They're currently consulting on whether and how to introduce sustainability-related disclosure requirements for companies using these UK standards. So there's a really important connection between these two things. So the FCA consultation is open at the moment. It's open until the 20th of March. So it includes really important questions about which entities have to provide this reporting and when they need to provide the reports. And it also asks some important questions on key areas, such as the reporting on scope 3 greenhouse gas emissions. So, for example, this consultation proposes that those emissions be disclosed on a comply or explain basis, which is a bit different to S2. So that's an important area for people to look at. So we really encourage stakeholders to respond to the consultation in the UK and also to flag that there's a number of other consultations from jurisdictions looking at sustainability reporting based on our standards as well that are open at the moment, one in Indonesia, one in Ethiopia, and one in South Korea. So please do get engaged in that. It's really important. So as Emmanuel mentioned earlier on, this is all about reporting for investors, and we know that a main driver for investors is this global comparability of information, and so they really want consistency in regulatory requirements. So the passporting discussions and all of these consultations are really, really important from an investor perspective. Which brings me to the last update that I wanted to just touch on before we talk about this week's board meeting, which is that we had a good meeting with our investor advisory group. As a quick reminder, our advisory group includes representatives of asset owners and asset managers that typify the perspective of users of sustainability-related financial disclosures. The input from this group is one of the ways that we ensure that we understand investor perspectives and that they're really clearly articulated and considered and understood in the ISSB standard setting process. And the IIAG members are important because they're really committed to improving the quality and comparability of sustainability-related financial disclosures. And they use this information to support price discovery, capital formation, and to make sure that they really understand the prospects for a company's prospects over the short, medium, and long term. So it's a really valuable group, and it was really great to meet with them to discuss our latest developments and to get their perspectives. So it's a really good way for us to keep anchored and focused on the investor decision usefulness of our work. And that's probably a really great way to get us into the frame of mind from this week's board meeting and how we discussed our projects that are all focused on meeting investor information needs. So Emmanuel, maybe you could talk about nature.
Yes, I could. Thank you, Sue. And yes, we indeed had two rich sessions on our nature project, which we officially renamed this week as Nature from its initial B's name, Biodiversity Ecosystems and Ecosystem Services, to nature-related disclosures. The first session was about exactly that, actually, making sure that we all speak the same language when it comes to nature-related risks and opportunities. It's a key driver for ISSB to be established, as there is a big demand from investors and policymakers for comparability, and of course companies, to make things simple. As simple as possible. To deliver that, markets need to speak the same language, and we made good progress, agreed to investigate definitions of key terms such as nature-related risks, and that's both transition risks and physical risks, and nature-related opportunities. That helps companies understand what is expected of them to meet investor information needs. We also agreed that if not defining, we would describe a set of terms and concepts. And we actually discussed why define and why describe. Description helps companies understand the scope of disclosures and the types of information investors are looking for, such as the terms such as nature-related dependencies, nature-related impacts. We have been ensuring that we continue to build on the task force for nature-related financial disclosures to consolidate and harmonize the landscape, and building from the agreement that we discussed and the decision we made back in November, we have been careful in the papers from the staff, but also in the board conversations, to ensure that there is a clear understanding of where and how we are using the TNFD language, while adjusting to ensure we are always consistent with IFRS S1 and IFRS S2 language, and of course, keep our focus on investor needs. The second session was on the nexus of climate and nature. We had a deeper understanding of how that connection, each one another, is driving change, both positive and negative, to nature and to climate. Climate change is a driver of nature change, nature loss, degradation, is a source of greenhouse gas emissions, and can increase vulnerability to extreme weather events, for example. So here we had a good discussion about what is already required in IFRS S1 and in IFRS S2 on the connections between climate and nature. We refer to the notion of connected information in IFRS S1. We have this point that, of course, in S2, it's not at all only about greenhouse gas emissions, but there are a number of other aspects which directly connect with nature, and where additional guidance is needed, especially in the context of strategy and risk management. Investors need information on the effects of an entity's risks and opportunities resulting from the connections between climate and nature. And I think it was really a good session to build the suite of standard setting activities that will follow from our initial research phase. So alongside our work to develop these new requirements on nature, there have also been an important session for us as we are enhancing some of the standards already in use by companies all over the world today. And these are the SASB standards. So our next session was on that, and maybe Sue, you can give us a highlight of how that went.
Sure. And maybe before I get into the discussion that we have, that's a good moment to remind us, everybody, why providing information about sustainability-related risks and opportunities on a sector or industry basis is really important. And that's because the way that these risks and opportunities manifest really varies based on the sector and industry that companies operate in. So for this reason, we know that investors like to receive industry-specific information. So the ISSB standards require companies to disclose industry-specific information, and we refer to the SASB standards as a source of guidance to provide that information. And indeed, in Europe, in the European Sustainability Reporting Standards, they require companies to disclose entity-specific information, and they reference the SASB standards as a source of guidance that companies can use to do that. So industry-specific information is relevant for companies all around the world who are reporting on sustainability-related risks and opportunities. And in that context, the SASB standards are the only complete set of industry-based standards available to companies to communicate industry-specific information that's designed for investors. So it's really important that the SASB standards enable companies to do this effectively. And that's why we're so grateful for the ongoing engagement in our enhancements work, and why this project is really just so important to the ISSB. So last year, we identified 12 of the SASB standards as priorities for enhancements, and we consulted in July last year on updates to 9 of those 12 standards. So this week in our board meeting, our first discussion was on the overarching strategic feedback we received in response to that exposure draft from last year. And we reflected on the investor support in particular for the work to enhance the SASB standards on a timely basis, which came through loud and clear in the response to that exposure draft. We agreed yesterday that we would continue with our phased approach and approved proposals for three further SASB standards, electric utilities and power generators standard, the meat, poultry and dairy standard, and the agricultural products standard. So we will move forward with an exposure draft on those three industries. And then like last year, the consultation will also ask for feedback on whether we should keep the alignment that we have between the climate content in our climate standard IFRS S2, the industry-based content there is identical to the corresponding climate requirements in the SASB standards. So we ask whether any changes we make to these three industries should also be reflected in the S2 industry-based guidance, which is what we did last time as well. Now, we did hear that the proposals last time were quite a lot to digest, and so we've done some things to streamline things, including making it really clear that if you ask some of the broader questions in last year's consultation, you don't need to answer those questions again this time around. You don't need to repeat your answers. We are also including some additional questions and really making sure that we're clear that we are interested to make sure that the risks and opportunities that we've identified are the right risks and opportunities and are we missing anything? So that's an important part of the proposals. As is always the case with our exposure drafts, we have a basis for conclusions. One of the things we heard last year in the exposure draft's response was that some people were still a little bit confused about how the ISSB standards and the SASB standards fit together when you're applying them. And so we have made sure that in the basis for conclusions for the new exposure draft, we have taken some more time to explain how to refer to the SASB standards and use them and how they connect to the ISSB information in S1 and S2. So hopefully that will be clearer for those of you reading the proposals. So keep an eye out for the consultation. It's going to be open for comment for a 120-day period. It should be published around March. And I want to thank you in advance for taking the time to look at those proposals and respond. The quality of our standards is totally dependent on the quality of the input and engagement. So really, please do respond. And it's fine just to respond on the metrics, the industries and the parts of the proposals that interest you or are relevant to you. You don't have to answer every question. So that's the recap of our February board meeting. Emmanuel, maybe you want to share a little bit about some of the other things that are coming up.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. And it was indeed a very rich agenda for the board this week. Happy that we've been able to process all of that and progress our agenda in a way that serves the market needs and momentum here in terms of delivering comparable information. Two things I would highlight around the overarching theme. I'd say that as our audience would know, all our clear priority is the support to the implementation of S1 and S2 and their quality application. Two things I've mentioned. First, the team is working on educational material to help explain the requirements in IFRS S2 related to climate-related scenario analysis. So you can expect to see it published in the coming weeks, as it is an important part of how we require companies to describe the resilience of their business to climate change. The second one is a bit of self-serving advertising for something that we have a lot of enthusiasm for, which is the IFRS Sustainability Alliance. It is a global membership program that brings together investors, companies, and advisors to share knowledge and hone their expertise together, again, in a collective approach for quality implementation and application support. And the news is that on the 12th of March, they are hosting a free taster session webinar for those considering joining to find out more about the Alliance program. So if your company is starting to apply the ISSB standards, I definitely encourage you to find out more about that session via our website. And for the rest of what's coming up about the ISSB, that will be in Montreal in March, and we will report back from there, Sue and I. Thank you so much for being with us, and stay tuned.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifres.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifres.org, or find us on social media.